You're listening to the Binge Media Podcast Network on bingemedia.net. And now, Small Screen Heroes.
Oh, Small Screen Heroes, it was on this week, gonna talk fucking Marvel and DC. You can rely on Batch and a guest host. You can rely on Batch and whoever. Small Screen Heroes, Supergirl and Flash, Doctor Who, Preacher, Arrow, Walking Dead. You know you're gonna love this podcast, Small Screen Heroes.
Hey there, buddies. Batch here. This is Small Screen Heroes. Small Screen Heroes is your one-stop shop on bingemedia.net for all things comic book and pop culture and television and comics. And this is a very, very special episode. We got a real artist this time. I'd like to introduce the one, the only, the madman, Mr. Andy Belanger. How are you doing, buddy?
Hey, what's going on?
Oh, man. Welcome to the show. You are our first real kind of artist on the show.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Cool. So you're here today. We're going to talk a lot of your work. We're going to talk Southern Cross. We're going to talk your story in heavy metal. We can talk some wrestling because I know you're a wrestling fan. Let's start with
I'm a pro wrestler.
Oh, yes. Well, I was keeping kayfabe, brother.
Yeah, no, Andy Belanger is not a wrestler.
Yeah, right. So let's talk that heavy metal story. That was pretty fucking cool. Like, was this your first work published in heavy metal?
Yeah, man. It was my first time in heavy metal. I've been trying to get into that magazine forever. I think it's the first comic that I ever picked up religiously since I was 13 and kind of like kept going from 13 till I was about 20 or about 30, I guess. I've always wanted to be in it. And then it basically underwent some changes and Grant Morrison kind of took over.
Yeah.
And I know a guy in Texas when I was doing one of the cons in Texas, and he had a friend that was in heavy metal, and then Donnie Cates came over, one of the writers I worked with, and he was saying that they were doing a bunch of heavy metal stuff, and I was like, hey, if you ever need me, let me know, let's rock.
Yeah.
So yeah, I got a 10 pager, or was it 10 pages? 8 pages? 8, 10 pages in the December issue of Heavy Metal.
Yeah, is that like going to be a continuing story? Because it kind of leaves it wide open at the end.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, they haven't come back to me. There was like rumor of me doing like another story outside of working with Duncan Trussell and Donnie Cates. I don't know if you guys know who Duncan Trussell is, but he's a kind of like a comedian out of LA that has a really amazing podcast called the Duncan Trussell Family Hour.
Nice.
And he interviews like crazy amazing guests like Dan Harmon and Joe Rogan and like Mark Maron. It's nuts. Cool. That I got to work with him.
Nice.
It's really cool.
So your story, The Simulationists, for those who haven't read it yet, give us a quick rundown.
Well, it has to do with simulation theory, which is the idea that there's a group of people out there that are in a like a cult that sort of like revolves around the ideas that this world is a bit like the Matrix. Like everything we're doing is slightly preordained, and there's other dimensions where different versions of you are doing things. Like it's kind of like the idea that everything's sort of like preordained, and like we're running through a simulation that's already been figured out.
Nice.
It has ties to like Christianity. So, you know, like they refer to, and if you read the story, you kind of get an idea of the wording, but like, you know, like our life is like the program and God is the programmer and Jesus is like the upgrade and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So in the beginning of my story, you know, God the programmer is sitting in a room surrounded by sort of like these computers that look a lot like the Ark of the Covenant, and he gets to basically choose the deity or pre-chosen form that he wants to create the world in that day.
Mm-hmm. That's what I kind of liked about it too, especially how like, everything with the introduction of how VR is like everywhere now. So
I did my first few VR demos not that long ago with my buddy Dean, who works at Ubisoft. He brought me over to a friend's place, and we did about don't know. I did about 20 demos. I was there for like 3-4 hours. I did 20 experiences. So games, experiences, like I did that Arizona Sunshine one where I was killing zombies. I did all the Disney stuff that they have right now. So some of the Star Wars stuff where I was like in the desert, you know, next to the fall, like Imperial cruiser that was in the dirt, like, and I'm right there in the desert.
Sweet.
Did you get motion sickness at all? Or Jakku. What's that?
Did you get motion sickness at all?
No, not at all, actually. No, I was pretty good with it. Some people do.
Mm-hmm.
I could see where you could. I remember when I took after a few hours, I remember taking the goggles off and thinking that real life was not real.
Yeah.
Like, because I was hanging out with a few people, right? Like, I was doing the demo, and like there was one guy running all the programs and stuff, and then my buddy was there, and I remember taking it off to take a break halfway through, and like my brain needed to acclimatize to being normal again. Like, everything felt digital.
Yeah, they say you're not supposed to like dive headfirst for too long until you get used to it.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was kind of interesting. And then, you know, I did everything. I saw what VR porn looks like. That was the funniest thing in the world.
Yeah.
I think there's people that are going to try this VR stuff and they're not going to come back.
Well,
you know what I mean? Like,
as we've learned with all technology, porn drives the industry. So it's going to get quite scary once the technology gets a little bit better and a little bit more affordable.
Oh, yeah, you bet. There's people going in and not coming out.
Yeah.
I'm going to be doing some VR stuff pretty soon. I started hooking up with a couple companies about working in VR because obviously it's going to be a growth industry. So I wanted to get in the base floor with some of these companies and start developing VR.
Nice. We're inching slowly one day at a time closer to Lawnmower Man, I think.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I'm going to be the Lawnmower Man.
There you go. Is that going to be your second gimmick?
Yeah, totally. Gimmick is Lawnmower Man.
You'll just be Job. So I think, like Southern Cross would kind of work as a VR experience because it's trippy as fuck. I have to say, I love that book, man.
Yeah, one of the companies came to me because of Southern Cross. They wanted to do a Southern Cross experience.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's talk about that. And it's, quite frankly, it's kind of perfect for VR.
Yeah.
You know, you start off slow, going onto the ship, seeing some of that stuff, and then going into like the dark, creepy hallways. Up until the time that the gravity drive starts freaking out, and then you start going into other dimensions and stuff like that, it'd be pretty fantastic, I think, as a VR experience.
Absolutely. So for those who haven't necessarily picked up Southern Cross yet, what's the Coles Notes version of it? I would describe it almost like Event Horizon meets Dead Space.
Yeah, totally. It's very Event Horizon, very much like The Shining on a haunted spaceship. Stylistically, the look to the comic is a very influenced by early 80s Ridley Scott. Everything's like very lo-fi, sort of like old, like all the computers would look like they come out of 1982.
Yep.
Cables, cords, pipes, all very lowbrow, lo-fi equipment, stuff like that. Very, very chunky and clunky. And it feels very claustrophobic. That's the other thing. Yeah, it's meant to feel like you're actually on a ship. It's meant to feel like, you're in tight spaces and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
How'd that come about?
Oh, that's just what I've always wanted to draw, man.
Oh,
like,
nice.
I've spent my entire career sort of doing things to break into comics. And I would say everything that I did in comics before Southern Cross was sort of just practice. I feel like Southern Cross is where I became the artist that I want to be.
Nice. Because we actually met during your Kill Shakespeare days.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, so I mean, Kill Shakespeare was a place where I was doing a lot of practicing, long format storytelling. It's definitely a platform where I learned a lot of my craft.
Nice.
And I kind of came out with what I like, what I didn't like. I mean, I work completely different from Kill Shakespeare in that, I'm not digital. I'm still traditional, but I work way bigger.
Yeah. Well, that's one thing that kind of impressed me, like with the scope of it too. I love that the book kind of it moves at a steady pace. It doesn't stay too long. Once like shit starts really going down, like shit starts really going wrong.
Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah,
totally. And like the second volume of Southern Cross, like immediately starts going crazy. I think into like
yeah,
is it like book at the end of book 8 or something? Maybe it's even 8. Whenever the riots start, yeah. Which I 8 like. Once the riots start on the rig, it's already like crazy.
Yeah, because like it throws you right. Okay, we're in the second volume. The character that kind of escapes without spoiling anything, because I know we are a spoiler podcast, but we want people to read the book. Makes his way to Titan, and then it's just on from there. Like the guy
yeah,
that
it's totally on. He's going bonkers after that. It's madness. Yeah.
Do you guys have an end in sight for that, or are you just taking it as it goes?
Yeah, like we have 3 trades, and then we have like a good ending with the 3 trades. I have an idea for 3 more trades after mm-hmm. that. Like I've got like sort of like that like 3 more trade story scenario in my head. I don't know if Becky has that in her head. We'll have to see what she's thinking. It all depends. Like I have Southern Cross and 2 other stories that I like, 2 of them that I'm writing that I would really like to do.
Yeah, because we'll see what happens. You really built your own little universe, almost like pun intended. I love the ads at the end of the each issue.
Yeah, yeah, like it's sort of an ode to the Paul Verhoeven movies, like RoboCop and Starship Troopers. They're really great for world building, and that stuff is really, really fun. I love doing those fake ads.
Yeah, because a lot of issues sometimes end on a cliffhanger, then it gives you the ads like, whoa, I didn't expect that, and that's kind of funny.
Yeah, yeah, that's really cool. Yeah, love doing those.
Who's your favorite character to draw so far in this book?
Oh, it bounces around. I love drawing Hazel, the old woman.
Yeah.
She's like, she's funny because awesome. She's like the most hardcore one in all of the stories. You know what I mean? She's the only one with a gun. Her backstory is like she's an ex chief of police.
Yeah.
And you remember back in like the Reagan days where they said they if you screwed up in the government, they were going to send you to Guam, or they were going to send you to Alaska into the middle of nowhere sort of thing. Yeah. That's basically what happened. She got disgraced and sent to like off planet to Titan. Oh yeah, I love drawing Hazel. She's such a badass.
Yes.
Yeah, she's the only one with a gun, and the gun like talks to her and stuff. It's really cool. Now she has like that severed head that like hangs around with her that's covered in like cordyceps. It's like it's pretty awesome.
It's not often you see Betty White as an action hero.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is. Or in Becky and I always joked it like that it was Judi Dench. So when we were on the first volume of Southern Cross, she was like, "Man, this could be so much fun if it was like Murder, She Wrote." And I was like, "Yeah, let's make the main character like Murder, She Wrote, like Judi Dench in space, like Judi Dench would be amazing."
Or like Tyne Daly. From Cagney and Lacey.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, any tease of where Southern Cross is going to be going in the future? Because you kind of almost, now you're getting into, at this point, like the company that knows a lot more than it's saying, and it obviously probably wants the artifacts. And
yeah, so the company's after the artifacts, but something happens in the issue that I'm drawing right now that comes out in March. That's going to be so crazy. And once this event happens, that's going to finish off the second volume. Once this event happens, the third, arc is going to be completely set up. Like you'll be like, you'll know where it's going.
Nice. Yeah. Cool. So, hopefully one day the Southern Cross VR experience, coming soon.
Yeah, that'd be like so cool, man. Yeah, I would love that VR experience.
Yes. Yeah. What else you got cooking?
Well, I'm working on the heavy metal. I'm working on Southern Cross. I'm doing WWE Comics for Boom Studios. I'm working on a 10-page story right now about Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn and their hugely famous feud.
Awesome.
Going from when they were kids in Montreal all the way up until WrestleMania 32.
How are you getting around the El Generico situation? Because
I have to just leave it out.
Oh, that's the best part of the story.
Yeah, our comic is everything we do is very much scrutinized by WWE. They go over everything.
Yeah.
So obviously the El Generico character, like, we couldn't play with at all.
It baffles me that they won't do it because El Generico is the big baby face they need. Like, it's like I always like to say, like, they're pushing Peter Parker when they should be pushing Spider-Man.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really cool. It's all ownership stuff, dude. Like, they don't own El Generico.
And he doesn't want
to. And they would have to buy him. And I think that basically, like, over years and years and years of doing this, they realized that they just want to create their own characters with wrestlers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, my character as a wrestler, like, I'd never be able to do that in WWE.
No.
Like, if I went to WWE, they would just turn me into, like, a dude without a mask sort of thing.
Like a vanilla No Way Jose.
yeah, basically.
Yeah,
like balding, friar tucking No Way Jose.
There you go. So it's pretty cool that you're doing the Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens stuff, because I started watching IWS back in the day, so back when they started.
Yeah, so I'm wrestling in the IWS Fed. I train with those guys every single week. I've gotten a lot more involved with the Fed too.
Yeah.
I'm going to be doing all the design stuff for them. I'm getting into a thing where I'm starting I want to start like a YouTube show, to create promos and stuff for when we don't have events. Something's going up every week.
Yeah. Cause they used to have Bloodstream back in the day.
Yeah. So ours, the new one's called, I don't know if you're around, but we have a big match February 4th.
Mm-hmm.
Called Freedom to Fight. My character's on the poster. It's pretty sweet.
Nice.
And we're going to have a battle royal to start it off, and we're going to have a bunch of matches going on. It's taking place on February 4th. It's going to be absolutely insane, and it's going to set up a major feud for the Animal for the next little while.
IWS does a lot. It's not all just deathmatch stuff, but are you shying away from that kind of stuff, or are you going to take your bumps when needed?
Oh, yeah. So here's the scenario. IWS is hardcore, yeah. Right? Like, we're a hardcore league and always have been. So I know the roots for hardcore wrestling are definitely, it's like ECW,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, the roots are there.
Guys like, but, Sexy Eddie, guys like, Crazy Manny, the Green Phantom, Hardcore Ninjas.
Yep. All that stuff's going on. But, you know, like, right now IWS is Manny's the man. Manny runs it. Right. And, awesome dude, complete sweetheart. I love Manny death. He's like my brother. He's so cool.
Nice.
Shane Hawk is the trainer. Him and Shane Hawk are the trainers at the IWS dojo.
Yeah.
And Andrew is helping me write the stuff for WWE that we're working on.
Cool.
So him and I are writing those books together. So I kind of work pretty closely with those guys about, you know, talking about what we can do with the Fed, where to go. We're basically starting a lot of new stuff because there's a lot of movement around. Like, they're not in that old theater that they were on Saint Hubert anymore.
Yeah,
that theater was amazing. By the way, I loved going to shows there, and they opened up a training facility, and then that kind of fell through. So we have a new training facility, and we're going to start having shows downtown again. Basically, the big thing is you want to be on the subway line, right?
Yep.
Anyway, so I work pretty closely with those guys, and I think basically what we're all talking about is we really need to try and get kids and families to come to the events.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about having events where we're going to be running the events on, like, an afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the events are going to happen at night, right? But, like, start at 7, end at 9 or 10, kind of like Battle War does, but like we want to try and start doing stuff to have kids come out because, you know, kids will buy merch and kids will spend money and kids will bring their parents. And like if you ever, I don't know if you've seen my character yet, but I have a very like kid friendly character thing.
That's what I was thinking with the Manimal. Like, okay, describe the character of the Manimal for those who haven't seen
it. Oh yeah. So, Bob, the Animal Anger is, oh God. He's like, Monsters Inc. meets Road Warrior.
Nice.
Yeah. So he's like a just a wild beast of a man. He's kind of like, he's like primordial man. He's like a guy that's been, you know, lost in the woods for like 40 years, you know, like raised by wolves. And, you know, he's just completely like wild. He'll eat chicken in his matches. Like he has a dog bowl sometimes that he drinks water out of. Like he's absolutely like wild and crazy. And like the when you see the animal, there's a lot to it. There's a lot of costume and stuff. And I'm a fairly big guy in the wrestling, like as far as like height and size goes. Yeah. I'm one of the bigger guys. So I mean, I'm not doing high flying moves, and I don't really have any. I don't really want to do those kind of moves.
No.
You know what I mean? I kind of have like more of an Undertaker moveset.
Yeah.
It's like the stuff that I do. Yeah.
Like less is more, because you can do a lot more with the characterization. And
yeah. Like it was so funny when Andrew and I have been friends for years from me going to Battle War and hanging out, and him and I became friends. Shane Hawk. And Shane Hawk and I started hanging out, and then he really wanted me to come train. So I trained once, and then it was like pretty grueling, and I got busy. And then I came back again, I think, in March or April, you know, a year ago, and started training. It was really grueling, but I was having fun. And then I think the second training thing that I went to when I came back, we had a practice match. And in that practice match, people were just like blown away right away, because I realized that this is like a lot of acting in theater. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I just became a character right away. And like everyone else in the school was just like, what is going on? And it was almost like a duck to water. I just took to the pro wrestling like as if I was drawing. It was almost like the same. It's been a long road to get myself like physically to where I am. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of like, I still have a long ways to go as far as like, cardio is like intense for wrestlers.
You gotta
like,
get that in.
Intense. You don't I'm an old guy. You know what I mean? Like I'm 39 this year.
You don't want
all the other guys are like, you know, 26, 27. They're pretty young.
You don't want to be blown up in your first 5 minutes.
Yeah. And I get blown up. You know what I mean? It happens. You just have to keep giving her in the mat. But, I'm getting better. I don't get, I've started actually doing matches in July. And I started with heavy MTL.
Yeah, I think that's where I first saw you as the Animal.
Yeah. Oh, you were at heavy.
Oh no, I just seen pictures because I follow you on Facebook and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So the Heavy Montreal, the Heavy Mania was my debut, and then the first IWS show that they had after that was my sort of like singles debut, and that went off like on fire. And then I did a Royal Rumble in Ottawa, and like, Manny set that up for me so nice, but it was like, I got to come out last and scare everyone out of the ring. And then I had like a few great spots with a guy dressed as a panda. it was fantastic. So the Animal kind of gets over everywhere he goes. He's like a nut. It's like transforming into a werewolf. You know what I mean?
Wrestling needs more fun.
Yeah, totally.
I'd like to see the Animal in Chikara. I think you'd fit in well there.
Well, we'll see what happens. Shane was talking to Quackenbush about it, so we'll see what happens.
Nice. I will pop fucking huge if you show up at King of Trios.
Yeah, that'd be so cool.
Team IWS.
And what's really weird is, you know, like, it may not happen. Two of my friends, Stephen Maines, is in the Young Lions Cup for Chikara coming up February 4th. And Buster Barao is going down there too as a like a backup. Two amazing wrestlers that I train with all the time. They're awesome guys. So they won't be at the Feb 4 show, but they're going to be at Chikara, and which is really cool. But oddly enough, you know, Shane was talking to me about Chikara and sent them photos of my character. And Quackenbush actually was a fan of Kill Shakespeare.
What was
the comic?
Well, there you go. You got your
in. Yeah, someone gave him the comics or something like that back when I was working on it. So he like already knew who I was. So that was like pretty funny.
Sweet.
Yeah, man, imagine learning stuff under Quackenbush.
Oh, dude.
Crazy. I just watch his like his stuff all day. Like every morning I wake up and watch a Quackenbush like best 20 moves.
Yeah. One thing I always love about Chikara too is like they tell a story over the course of a season. And I don't think wrestling gets enough of that. Like they're so quick to just drop shit because it's not working. They don't give it time to marinate.
Yeah, you really got to work on storytelling. And that's what we want to do with IWS going forward.
Cool.
Like whether hardcore, whether kids, it's like for kids. I'm not saying for kids, just like, you know, I think they need to just drop as much of the swearing as they can.
Yeah. It has to evolve.
I think kids can see people take tables. You know what I mean? Yeah. Me personally, you're never going to see me with the glass or tacks or that stuff. My lady friend has like said, if I start hardcore wrestling, that's it. she's like, you're an artist. You make our money by drawing comics, and you're not going to hurt yourself stupidly doing that. That's kind of like all hardcore, but I really want to take a table sometime.
Oh yeah, I
love tables. Like how can an animal not go through a table? It's like it has to happen.
it has to. You gotta break that table cherry sometime.
Yeah, totally. I have to.
Hopefully, I'm dying. Hopefully, it's not one of those Canadian tables that don't break.
Oh God, I don't know. I'm pretty heavy.
Yeah.
So it'd be fine. Yeah.
I can't remember what show it was. I think it was maybe. It was some Canadian show, but the tape, like a guy did a power bomb onto a table, and the table just like flipped 360 sideways. It didn't break at all.
Oh God, that would suck.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would not feel good.
So that's why I've been joking with my buddies. Canadian tables are like Japanese tables. They don't give a fuck.
Oh, no, you gotta come down on them pretty hard. So, man.
Segueing back to the WWE stuff, that's one kind of thing I like about what they're doing with their series is that they're filling in the blanks that you don't see on TV.
Yeah, I think that's the idea. They're trying to bring you a product that you haven't seen already.
Mm-hmm. So,
and the story that I wrote with Andrew is basically that it's like the whole history of them growing up as kids.
Cool.
Very, very cool. We actually wanted to do some crazy stuff where we wanted to have like a rumble in you know this square in Montreal in Notre Dame with the statue. We want to have like a street brawl there. I wanted it to be like an 80s style Bronx Warrior kind of like thing. They didn't go for it. They wanted more traditional wrestling stuff. So
you can't sneak in Tone Down Frankie the Mobster, Tone Down Sexy Eddie.
Well, that was it. I was going to put all the Montreal wrestlers in the gang fight. It would have been hilarious. Awesome. It would have had everyone in it.
Oh man!
It's not going down like that. They just wanted less pages. Like I pitched a two comic thing. Like I pitched like a 40-50 page thing.
Yeah.
And they were like, "Well, we'll give you 10 pages." And I was like, "That's probably good. I'm already doing Southern Cross."
Well, like, maybe hopefully need... one day. Let's hope it takes.
Yeah.
Maybe...
Yeah.
Cool. So thanks very much for dropping by. Anything else you want to promote or where can people find you on the interwebs?
If you just look me up, man, like Andy Belanger on Instagram or Twitter or Facebook, I come up right away. You know, if you want to look at my art, hit Google, hit Instagram. That's the best way to find me. I have a new show on Twitch called The Nature of Comics with Carl Kershaw. It's airing... Monday, Wednesday, Friday from 2 to 5 or 2 to 6.
Nice.
Three times a week. We're doing drawing training. We have like a bunch of banter back and forth. There's two screens, so you see Carl's screen digitally, and then you see my screen or my table for traditional comics. Yeah, so check out that show on Twitch if you're not doing anything Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
Absolutely. And hopefully we can get some IWS on Twitch one day.
Oh, well, I mean, obviously, like, I was on Twitch today, and Shane Hawk called me and was like, oh, we should do that. And I was like, yeah, man, totally. I would love to do – I don't know how to figure it out yet. Because there's – you know, the whole idea of Twitch is, like, you have the chat bar, and you're going back and forth with the people in the community. Yeah, some sort of thing on wrestling – would be really fantastic. I'd like to show clips on my Twitch show that I have right now.
Nice.
And and the other thing I want to plug is the show at Unity on February 4th. If you're in Montreal, come out. Contact me directly at andy@andyboulanger.com if you need tickets.
Sweet.
I have a ton of tickets. And if I sell the most tickets for the show, I get special perks at my training facility.
Nice. Well, we'll have to send a friend of the show, Denny Louis, because he lives in Montreal, so, and he's a wrestling fan. So I've been bugging him to go to IWS, yeah. IWS for a while, so he'll have to be our correspondent. Cool. Well, thanks so much for dropping by, Andy. You're welcome anytime. And if you see him at a com, tell him what's up. So moving on. Seeing as though this is Wednesday time of recording, let's do some new releases, because there's a lot of books. Wednesday's new comic book day out there. There's a lot of good stuff. There's a lot of crap. And let's do this. Use this show as an opportunity to cut the good stuff from the bullshit. So, new releases as of February 1st. Let's see what's on the docket. Walking Dead number 163, Negan and Rick struggle to save Alexandria from the largest ocean of the dead in series history. So, this is on the tail end of the Whisperer War, so the war is now done and just dealing with the fallout of the Whisperer sending literally the biggest amount of zombies at Alexandria this series has ever seen. I got a feeling a lot of people are going to die, but it is kind of cool just seeing Negan and Rick working together, just trying to survive against the Horde. Batman number 16, I Am Bane, part 1. Bruce, Dick, Jason, and Damian share a meal at Batburger. So it answers the old question of how does Batman eat his hamburgers? With a knife and fork. I shit you not. While Bane plots revenge. So this is the second arc of since the Rebirth reboot. The first one with Batman having to go to Bane's island of bad guys to rescue the Psycho Pirate to help someone. Now, Bane wants his revenge. Star Wars number 26. Luke reads Obi-Wan's journal, and we learn of the untold story of Yoda. So, with the Marvel Star Wars series, it sets, like, during the episodes 4, 5, and 6. So, I guess this is going to fill in some of the backstories of why Luke goes to seek out Yoda. Bullseye number 1. Many people were killed by paperclips in this first issue of his regular series. Pretty much. So it's about time that Bullseye actually gets his own regular series. Yeah, we'll work with the Punisher. Why not a character like Bullseye? Champions number 5. The team tries to stop a conspiracy to shut down an LGBTQ center when Gwenpool shows up and offers her help, whether they want it or not. Champions is kind of one of those new series I've actually been enjoying from Marvel. So it's basically all like the teenage, it's almost like a Marvel version of the Titans. So it's young Cyborg, it's Amadeus Cho, the Hulk, it's Miss Marvel, the teenage female Vision, and Nova. So it's pretty cool. A little bit of history with, there was an old Champions series in the 19, it's gotta be early 80s, maybe late 70s. But very cool, and I love the art team on it. Humberto Robles is doing the art, and Mark Waid is writing. So those are just a few of the new releases that are available this week. Pick them up. Mr. Jim Law, how you doing, my friend?
What's up, Batch?
Oh, I brought you here today because a few weeks ago on your Facebook, you posted that you were reading a little graphic novel called Black Hole.
Yes.
And I thought, hey, that looks fucking cool, and actually gives me something to talk about on this show. So I read Black Hole, and holy shit, man, that this is a interesting story for those who have not read it.
That's right. I thought it was the comic adaptation of the old Disney movie Black Hole.
I was gonna make
but it wasn't.
I was gonna make an Ernest Borgnine joke, but I think that would be dating ourselves.
It wasn't that. It was about much darker and weirder things. Yes.
Yeah, so Black Hole is a story from Kitchen Sink Press. You can find it probably at all comic stores everywhere, online, wherever one buys comic books. And it's about the 1970s in this small town, and about this STD that's going around, that when you get it, you become physically transformed into a freak.
Yeah, it affects a bunch of... It's basically just passed around between kids. So you're right, it's like an STD. It's used as an STD as in the story, basically. And it's all these teenagers in high school that are passing it on to one another. And but it's always like kind of a... We've talked about this. I always want to say we talked about this last time. Truth be told, we already recorded this, but somehow the file got destroyed. But
in a black hole.
What we did talk about last time was that all the symptoms that show up, they're all different on all the different kids.
Yeah, like for some, it just looks like they're normal and they've got like something under their armpit. Some people become like hideous freaks.
Yeah, there'll be bumps on someone's face, like big giant lumps. You know, one chick just has a tail. One chick just sheds her skin. Just like really, really random and weird shit.
Yeah. You got to feel bad for the guys that have like really got it bad. Like you admit, probably think those were like the utter nerds in high school. Probably the biggest nerd you have or outcast, the more physically outward that your deformity is.
That's right. And that's a good example because... it's like acne.
Yeah.
Because the people that don't have it that bad, they're still able to, you know, socially function and do what they got to do. But say like you're a kid that just has like the worst acne ever. Well, that's kind of how it's treated in the book too, because there's some people that get like directly outcast from not only school and their social life, but like their family. Like they go on to live by themselves out somewhere else. Because it's just so severe and they look like freaks. Yeah, but otherwise, the mild cases of it, you know, it's just, you just have it. Oh, he's got it. And, you know, you would talk about someone like as if they were pregnant or something, like, oh, look at Susie. She's got it. And just that's it.
But
they're not like superheroes or mutants or anything like that. They just got the fucking whatever you want to call it. Is it referred to as anything in the book? I can't remember.
It's referred to as the bug.
The bug. Okay. Right.
Yeah. And I love how everyone's immediate reactions is, let's go live in the fucking woods.
Yeah.
My life is over. I'm going to live in the fucking woods like an outcast.
That's right. And I mean, most of the attitudes of the kids that live out in the woods, you kind of feel like they were stepping that way anyways. You know what I mean? Like it's those dark and kids just want to get high and fucking listen to music and all that kind of shit. And we do get scenes like that too. It is a 70s. It is a Dazed and Confused type of fucking feel to the entire story.
Yeah, they reference like at one point the one chick that the popular chick that got that gets the bug but that can shed her skin. She looks perfectly normal, but she considers her life ruined. She goes to hide in the woods. She goes back to meet her best friend, and her best friend's into David Bowie now. She's like, what the fuck is this shit?
Right. There's a lot of great comparisons to like real life. You know, like it's just like it's the normal social. It's just adolescence. It's just the normal setup of a fucking high school and what kids go through, except that, you know, one guy has a mouth on his neck.
Like stuff like that. That talks in his sleep.
Yeah. So it's very strange, and at the same time, it's not forced down your neck. Like, oh my god! Like they don't talk about this guy's mouth on his neck, like more than a few seconds at a time.
No, but it has a couple of the best moments actually in the series.
Yeah, it does. It does. Like, whereas you could honestly, like, there could be an entire story just about a guy with a mouth on his neck, but he's just another character in this book.
He's just a dude, and it's funny because he's sleeping, and then his mouth is muttering, "This is never gonna work." To talking about his relationship, it's his innermost thoughts that are coming out through his neck.
He literally has no inner voice because his mouth neck always talks about whatever he's thinking.
That's the worst superpower of all time.
Just chirps people constantly. Chirps his boss. Fucking asshole. I didn't say it. It was the voice in my neck.
That's the worst.
Then there was Chris, who is the popular chick who was in love with the guy with the voice in his neck. She could shed her skin, but again, unless she was like wearing a bikini, you would never know that she had it.
Right. There's what, four characters we follow throughout the book?
There's four main characters. Then there is, what was his name? The guy that was in love with Chris, but she wanted completely nothing to do with.
Keith?
Yeah, Keith. That was Keith. Mm-hmm. He voluntarily gets it because he's fucking weird and just seeing vaginas everywhere. Like, the amount of vagina symbolism in this book is really fucking weird, but...
Yeah, Keith likes the vagina. I got the feeling that he's kind of attracted to the bug for some reason. Like, because is it Keith that Eliza is the chick with the tail, and he's fucking obsessed with this chick? Although she is, you know, she's put off in this book as hot as fuck.
Yeah,
it's just that she's got a cute little tail, and it's described as cute. You know what I mean?
Yeah, she makes it work, and it's funny because he immediately tries to put her in the friend zone because he wants Chris, but then he realizes, wait a minute, she likes me for me, and she's in this shitty situation because she's in this house with a lot of stoners, a lot of weed in this book too. So,
yep,
weed and circus freaks almost.
Yeah, basically, yeah, it could be like a sideshow. Fucking kind of story, you know what I mean? Honestly, that's what it kind of feels like at one point when everyone's just hanging around with the bug, and then you get the different personalities of the people with the bug. Mind you, none of them are really that likable other than the four characters, but
yeah
it's got that feel to it.
Won't pick up shit in the woods, bunch of fucking letter bugs. Like, over because this actually series is like 12 issues, and it took it 9 years for them to put this whole series out. So there is a little bit of time jump between issues. So like by issue 12, like everyone's in the woods for a while. There's litter all over the place. They're not taking care of shit.
Yeah, and it's like they're being ignored too. Like, even if people kind of find out they're there, no one cares. Like, just leave them there.
Not a single parent in this book, just like the wizard.
Yeah, they're not, either they're gone away or they're just not talked about.
Yeah, like not a cop, no missing persons.
Yeah.
They didn't check.
It's very dark.
Because you figure word would get around town. Like, if Billy's missing, well, why don't you go check the woods with all the people, with all the freaks?
Right. Yeah, like it's very dark. It seems really dark and weird. You were talking about the guy like having all these vagina images. There's a lot of imagery in this book.
Yep.
A lot of abstract kind of pages in the comic that you're just like, what the fuck is this guy thinking about? Is this like people fucking and dying and bugs and fucking snakes and pussies and dicks? A lot of dick in this book too, by the way.
Yeah, corkscrew dicks, like a pig's tail.
Yeah, like not just normal dicks. There's normal dicks too. If you're a dick kind of person, you'll like the normal dicks. But then there's just crazy dicks too. Yeah. Like, so many crazy dicks.
So
Kupka is like Kupka. The almighty cock might be in this book, so Kupka might enjoy it.
Yes. Beautiful art, black and white too.
Yep.
I really like this guy's art style.
It's fantastic.
And once I believe a Harvey Award too for best graphic novel.
Yeah. There's if you search up like images for Black Hole or whatever. I had read, what did I read? I don't know. I read somewhere. I think I checked out the book on Wikipedia after I read it, and they talked about this video that was made that we'll talk about in a little bit.
Oh yeah.
So when I searched up Black Hole short movie or something like that, and I went to Google Images, there's a bunch of, because the inner side of the jacket is kind of, or even the back cover is like a yearbook.
Yeah.
And in the yearbook, all the kids have something going on with them. Like, that tells you what's, you know, that's the bug. Everyone has something wrong with them. If you go to the image in Google Images, they have like real life people for this. I don't know if this was for the video or what this was for. It was just someone doing some sort of art project or something like that. But it's really kind of fucking weird.
I would assume it's I would assume it's for the Rupert Sanders short, because this thing started in, what, 2005? First got reported that it was going to be adapted by French director Alexandre Aja. Then 2006.
Yeah, the guy that did like High Tension and that. Yeah.
Yeah. Neil Gaiman's name was attached to it for a while. At one point in 2008, David Fincher was set to direct it. But then he bounced in 2010.
Yeah. See, Roger Avery was connected to this too with Neil Gaiman. Yeah. That kind of is like, honestly, that seems like, because you think about Rules of Attraction,
yeah,
and then Neil Gaiman, it's like a dream team for this project. It really is. Now, I love Fincher, and he is also a dream team by himself to direct this. Yeah. But that Gaiman Avery thing, that's it. Like, honestly, I couldn't pick a better duo to write this, because Avery will get the fucking, you know, the adolescence and the angst and all that kind of shit that's going on with these kids, and yeah. Gaiman has the imagery. Just pick that guy's brain and he's going to bring something to the table. But yeah, that video we were talking about,
yep,
Rupert Sanders, he was pitching, he wanted to make it into was it a movie or was
it
a...
I think just a movie. I think it was just like a proof of concept kind of thing of exactly what the investors would be looking at when they sunk money into it.
So he got a couple... I guess I only recognize one, the main dude.
Chris Marquette.
Yeah, Chris Marquette plays... was it Keith?
I think he's Keith. Keith. I assume he's Keith.
And it's about, like, what is it, 10 minutes?
Yeah.
And they really kind of nail it. They do, like, it's like we said, it's short. It's very, very dark. There's no explanation. It's not like an intro to the story or anything like that. You're just thrown right into the middle of it. But, you know, they kind of nail it. They intertwine some storylines, but that's just to show what they were going to do with the main characters, I believe. And you know what I mean? Like, it's really whacked out. And this would work as a TV show. This is something we also talked about last time we talked. This... You know, in the right hands, maybe an AMC, but like a fucking HBO or Showtime, or not Showtime, they'll go on for 17 seasons with it. But
then they'll get cured, this could be a really different bugs, and
This could really work. You know, like we were talking, we were comparing it to Outcast. Like Outcast, this would be a visually and more relatable, I honestly believe that, story to its audience than Outcast is. But because, you know, Kirkman's name's attached to Outcast, it got made like that. This would work as a fucking two, maybe one or two season television show and be fucking pretty addictive, I think.
Yeah, as I mentioned in the last conversation that vanished, it should be Cameron Crowe meets David Lynch.
That's a dream matchup right there. Yeah, absolutely. Like that's just another way to say Roger Avery and Neil Gaiman. Honestly, like that those are perfect fucking matchups right there to write this. You get that teen angst, that teen relationship. That's where the Cameron Crowe comes in, and then you get the imagery of fucking Fincher or Gaiman. Like honestly, that is, we can't explain what this story is about more than just telling you those names.
Lloyd Kaufman and John Hughes. There you go. Wow. That'd be a more fucked up version of Black Hole, but...
It would have good music, though.
Absolutely.
Well, Cameron Crowe would have good music, too, I guess. Yeah.
Yes.
He would actually starring John Cusack.
Yeah, like, he would actually get the David Bowie, what was the other one?
Right.
Allman Brothers? Was that the other band that they referenced?
Yeah, I think so.
But, yeah.
John Cusack could be Keith, and then... He's like 50.
He's still a 50-year-old dude. It's okay because he's gonna justify it to himself because he's got shit all over his face. You can't tell that he's 50.
All right, that's his bug. He looks like he's 50 something. All right.
Before he gets the bed, before he gets the bug, they'll just like CGI like Robert Downey Jr. Yeah, like young.
Oh yeah, young John Cusack. Yeah, right.
Absolutely. Then he's suddenly 50. It's tremendous.
What if Cameron Crowe? Hold on, let's sidetrack for a minute. Cameron Crowe. Well, like John Hughes is dead, right?
Yeah.
So Cameron Crowe or somebody that wants to make John Hughes films, just do that. Like, just CGI John Cusack and just start all over it. Like, he'll have a whole new career of just young CGI John Cusack movies. And my wife will fucking fall in love with him all over again. I swear to God, she will watch every single one of those.
Oh, like he can, like, work from home and just, like, voiceover on Skype.
He's constantly CGI'd, and for the rest of his fucking natural life, he just does teen comedies. It's a fucking fantastic idea.
We got to pitch that. Let's give a rating. How many crazy penises would you give this book?
Oh, there's a lot of crazy penises. I go with easy. If there's one thing I didn't like about the story, I do like a fucking solid and definitive ending. This one kind of hangs up in the air, and I get it. It fits the overall tone of the story. I would have liked a little bit more. We talked about this last time too. Yes. There is a bad guy in the story, but it doesn't come till very, very late. And you had mentioned, you know, maybe that's because it took so long to write. Maybe he felt like Burns was like, oh, well, maybe this guy. And he picks one of the characters who was in the whole story, by the way, the whole time, and then just turns him into a bad guy near the very end. I would have liked, I don't know if I want to, that doesn't necessarily need a bad guy.
No.
So either have him from the beginning and make a plot out of that, or just kind of leave that out and just make it about these kids. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
totally. So agree.
When that last arc happens, it like happens real quick, and it's just really kind of out of the blue.
Yeah,
and you really don't get much resolution on Chris, where she went. She just fucking left the fucking house.
Yeah, I know. That's what I mean. This is a little bit more closure, and one way or the other with that fucking that villain storyline. But I'm still a very strong 8. Like, I really, really like this story.
I will give it a 8 floppy vaginas as well.
Nice. I'm crazy penises and you're floppy vaginas?
Yes.
Okay. I'll deal with it.
The rating scale differs depending on what book.
Right, on what bug you have. I have the crazy penises one.
Well, yeah, if we were reviewing Watchmen, it would be giant blue cocks.
Right, yes. That's across the board.
Yes. Speaking of Watchmen, there might be some more Watchmen talk. I may want to get some feedback from you on, since the DC is bound and determined they're bringing Watchmen into the mainstream DCU. So maybe in the next few months, once shit goes down...
I'll have to catch up. I didn't watch that fucking... Or I didn't... Sorry, watch. I didn't read the sequel. There was a sequel, wasn't there?
No, I didn't. No, it was just like a lot of the prequel stuff, like how it got to that point.
Like, oh, okay. It was a prequel.
Yeah, so like there was like a Comedian miniseries. There was a Ozymandias. There was every single freaking character got his own almost little mini. And basically, it's all like the backstory up to Watchmen.
So there's been no continuation of that story whatsoever?
Not till now. As I say, like with DC Rebirth, when that launched last year, it was revealed that Dr. Manhattan is kind of responsible for the last time DC Universe got rebooted.
So, oh, really?
Yeah. So basically, it's his fault we lost 10 years and everything went terribly fucking wrong. So where they're going now is Batman and Flash are kind of investigating it, because the happy face button with the blood on it showed up in the Batcave.
So, oh, really? So would the characters... This isn't a retelling of Watchmen. This is like Watchmen, the graphic novel, actually happened. The events happened, and now...
Yeah. Yep.
Now, okay.
They're just bringing everybody in. So,
okay. So what would the timeline be? Would it be years after the happenings of Watchmen, or would it be like... I don't know, a couple years after.
It's weird, because the way that the one thing that spun out of is the Dr. Manhattan one. And basically, I think it ended with something like he's deciding, okay, I think I'm just going to fuck with some worlds and I'll just create my own universe. So people are thinking maybe that's the DC universe.
Right.
It's really weird. They haven't really announced much, but it's going to be interesting to say the least. Because it looks like Ozymandias has been around Superman for like months. Fucking with Superman. This character called Mr. O. So everyone's assuming it's Ozymandias.
You know, I just don't hope... I hope they don't rely on the Dr. Manhattan stuff too much, where he can just do basically fucking anything. And just... You know what I mean? Like, it's... Jesus Christ, a whole series of books is based on what he can do and not do. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't fall back on that for everything.
Somewhere, Alan Moore is just banging his head against a
wall. Oh, my God. Yeah. He just fucking hates anything to do with adaptations of Watchmen.
Cool. Well, thank you very much for coming on, Jimmy. Wrapping this up with me. So until next time. So Black Hole, book of the month, or book of the episode, book of the week. You know what I'm saying? we had to do this twice already. So just wrapping her up. Read Southern Cross. That's a book you should actually check out, Jim.
Belanger.
So it's basically almost like Event Horizon meets Dead Space, which is like meets Alien, kind of like that. Really creepy outer space book. It's awesome.
All right. I'll seek it out.
Yep. So until next time, I'm Batch, and read a book. And...
You've been listening to the Binge Media Podcast Network on BingeMedia.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Buy some merch at BingeMedia.net/shop. Subscribe to our newsletter at BingeMedia.net/newsletter. And don't forget...
I can't get enough of soup.
Bob Odenkirk.